This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
On the mean streets of Gotham City, a new breed of supervillains emerges. But deep in the shadows, old school justice awaits.
I'm the Batman.
The Caped Crusader returns in an all-new animated series. The Batman. You won't even see it coming.
This is it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 271 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our Twitter account. He's still here, or I guess it's now, man, if people are listening to these episodes years from now in order, it's not a Twitter account anymore, it's an X account, apparently, because that's what they are. That's what powers that be have rebranded it as. Who knows if that's still the name of that site, if it even exists, if you're listening to this 50 years from now, whatever now is. But regardless, it's Liam. He's back for episode 271 of the program. Liam, it's the fifth Saturday of the month, and after a landmark episode last week, just a joy talking to a very special guest correspondent about a very memorable episode of Batman the Animated Series. We asked ourselves, should we hang it up? Should we just walk off? Should we go out on a high note? But, you know, we still like doing these things and we have sponsors, so we had to come back for another week.
That's right. We are obligated to our many listeners, but more importantly to our sponsors. Our brands, which you know we love and whom we took money in exchange to plug their product for a certain amount of episodes within a single month. So we are back. No, I kid, of course, but yes, as you mentioned, it's an Elseworlds. We're returning to a world we actually haven't visited as often as I thought we did, looking back over previous episodes, but you're returning to the world of the Batman, and we are talking about the episode Traction, season one Here's a fun one. It's the second episode produced. It was the third episode to air, but either way, it's called Traction. And as we talked about last week, is kind of a secret little accidental 30th anniversary of the introduction of the Bane Breaks Batman's Back storyline Nightfall into the comics. So we are back on the Bane train again this week.
As you so eloquently put it last week, we have Bane on the brain, so let's get that Bane train rolling. And it is a fun and memorable one. We had, as we talked about last week, we had a good friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, on the program talking about the legendary Batman the Animated Series episode Bane. We talked a lot about that. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that, I don't know what you're doing. Go back and take a listen. It's a lot of fun. Not only do we get some great insight about the whole process in adapting that character just a year and a half or so after he had been introduced into main DC continuity, created basically, and then some of the reluctance that the BTOS team had in adapting that character, but then how they kind of found their way, how they ended up embracing it, what different things they enjoyed about it. We even fantasy booked and looked at what it would have been. Kevin gave us his opinion on what it would have looked like had they decided to go through with breaking Batman's back, how that story would have played out. across the series of episodes, and a lot of fun, a lot of cool insight, some great behind the scenes stories, as we always get when Kevin joins us on the program. But go back and check that out. But as we continue on the Bane train, Liam, as you mentioned, we are covering an episode of The Batman, which is called Traction. And this episode originally aired back on September the 25th, 2004, and we briefly mentioned it last week. Believe it or not, we're coming up almost on the 20-year anniversary of the Batman series debuting on the Kids WB. So we anticipate maybe doing some more reviews next year in honor of its anniversary. But in the meantime, before we get started with our breakdown of this week's Elseworld tale, we will, of course, get the official IMDb synopsis. There is no other. And it is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today, and you can get some incredibly great content from a bunch of different DCAU content creators, including the entire Tim Talk catalog, which features a rundown of each and every episode of the DCAU from start to finish, and a lot of great content in between. Not only that, but the ongoing Watchtower Database Jump on the Batwagon podcast also finds its home there each and every week. New episodes, I think almost weekly, are posted on there. They occasionally have some scheduling conflicts, but I'd say almost on the nose weekly, you can find a new episode dropped there from the good folks at Watchtower Database. And then not only that, but you also get our entire catalog as well, available in one convenient streaming place. That's right. Find your home at youtube.com/The Pod Tower today. And please, please subscribe.
That is right, Cal. So this is the synopsis for Traction, which was written by Adam Beechin, directed by Sam Liu, with music by Thomas Chase and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Batman battles the masked criminal Bane, but once Bane activates his chemical steroid infusion, Batman finds himself outmatched by brute strength.
That's pretty good. I kind of like the adjectives that they used. I didn't see anything wrong with that. That's a pretty good intro. I think I give that an A. That's
wow.
Yeah. Maybe a B plus, but
it's a rarity on this one. But yeah, I think it's pretty succinct, as we can jump into plot here. And that is something I think, especially in this first season of the Batman, there's no plot here. I don't want to insult Adam Beechin, the writer of this episode. Also a very prolific comic book writer, has written some Batman Beyond tie-in books, as well as had a run on Robin that I think is pretty criminally underrated from the mid-2000s. But so not disparaging the writer, but this show, especially in this first season, it's about action and it's about toy tie-ins. Let's be real here. The Batbot and the Batwave and the Batmobile and all of that. That's first and foremost in this episode. But
advertising and brands, you know?
That's right, which we love. So.
A toast to unbridled capitalism.
That's right. But yes, as we kick it off in a sort of secluded underground location, literally underground, we see three unnamed mob bosses kind of all lamenting how Batman has made life hell for them and how they're looking for a solution. And actually, it's two of them are talking about that. And then the third mob boss walks in and tells the first two that they have their solution. And we are introduced to a mysterious masked man who promises that he has a way to stop the Batman for good.
Why are we meeting here? Everyone knows he's attracted to shadows. Relax. The Batman thinks we split Gotham months ago.
He dismantled my operation brick by brick.
Took down all my men single-handedly. I can't even sleep nights.
Batman. I know. You ruined me too. But you can kiss those worries goodbye. I found a solution to our problem. A mercenary. Volunteered for some physical enhancements in a secret lab deep in the Amazon. Wild, eh?
Yeah, we got the money.
We're in.
Gentlemen, meet Bane. sure this guy can take down a Batman?
Just because he wears a mask doesn't make him some kind of Superman.
There is much more to me than meets the eye.
Yeah, he's got a little Apple Watch, right? He's gonna dial up some trouble. No, of course not. He introduces himself, of course, as Bane. And he just kind of holds up his wrists and shows a shiny little object, which, of course, we will come to find out later on. Although I don't believe it's ever called by the name Venom. It is indeed his Venom serum that is plugged into his wrists there. But meanwhile, back at the Batcave, we have Bruce working on Chekhov's mech suit for the episode. He's doing some experimentation. It's basically Tony Stark. Like, there's a couple of homages in here to other forms of media that we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. Plot wise, there's some stuff that's adapted from the Nightfall storyline from the comics, and another homage that I discovered and pointed out to you before we went on the air. But yeah. So we get Chekhov's mech suit, and Bruce is doing some experimentation, working on a mech suit. But he unfortunately is listening to his music way too loud because he's a young fella. This is year three, I believe.
This ain't your dad's Batman. All right, he's cool. He listens to rock music.
That's right. He has some blinders on too, and he's just kind of in the zone and doesn't happen to hear Alfred coming down, who's carrying a fresh tray of food for Bruce, and interrupts him. And this causes Bruce to swing his arms wildly, which causes the robot arms, which are connected to the controls on Bruce's arms, to knock Alfred down. Luckily, as both Alfred quoting Monty Python would say, "'Tis merely a flesh wound," as it's nothing serious. Bruce advises that he gets a medical help, but Alfred happens to mention that his time, I believe, in the military and working as a physician in the military should be of help to him in this case, as it's nothing serious. But
Master Bruce,
Alfred.
Your nachos, sir.
Let's get that bandaged.
Merely a flesh wound? I do believe my military medical training has equipped me to deal with such injuries. And that would be for?
Don't know yet, but it sure is cool. If only the engineers at Wayne Industries knew their cutting-edge tech was being used to assist the Batman.
If only we could build a cleaning robot to assist the Batman's butler.
As he does suggest, by the way, that Bruce, perhaps instead of working on a Wayne Enterprises funded Batman mech suit, that he could perhaps work on developing a cleaning robot to help around Wayne Manor rather than just things that help Batman. But Bruce kind of laughs that off. But we learn that the police are still in the case of Batman and trying to kind of work in and around him, as we get we get shots of both of our star detectives. We have Detective Yin and Detective Bennett, who are kind of discussing the goings on in and around Gotham. And we get a I guess at this point it's a standard in Batman. We got it later on in the Christopher Nolan films. I guess that was after this, right? Nolan films were 05 or 06, I think. So
yes, Begins is definitely like summer of 05. So
okay. So I much later than that would we get the attack on the armored or the police that the Joker does, where in the middle of Gotham. So maybe some inspiration, probably not, just a happy coincidence from Christopher Nolan here. But we get an armored car attacked in the middle of Gotham as they are ambushed by Bane, who is there looking to seemingly rob the armored car. But we learn very quickly he's not really interested in the money. It's a trap. And he's set up to bait Batman, who gets an alert He's on his way there, and he arrives and realizes that with the armored car broken into, knocked over, and the money still remaining in the vehicle, it is in fact a setup. And then it appears that not only did Bruce hear the attack on the armored car happen, but we also get the detectives en route. So there's all this. They're set to arrive just as Batman encounters Bane for the very first time. And as Bane introduces himself, as is tradition, Batman does not fare very well in his first fight against Bane, as Bane immediately sort of goes toe-to-toe with Batman, kind of gives some fisticuffs, but the scales are unevened once Bane introduces this chemical that is implanted in his veins on his wrist. He grows to a, I dare say, an incredible Hulk size type character. Mm-hmm. In this a lot of Hulk in this Bane's DNA is he's able to wrap his hand completely around Batman's waist and really does a number on him, punching him, throwing him around. A lot of violence, a lot of action. Batman does his best to lay some punches in, but ultimately Batman gets thrown and thrown through a brick wall, which partially collapses on him, seemingly leaving him defeated. Bane also seemingly at this point believes Batman is defeated and leaves him in the dust, quite literally, as we get a commercial break cut of Bruce grasping a brick, but then sort of releasing it. And when we come back, Bruce is still down and trying his darndest to get his faithful butler's attention as he rings Alfred and tells them that
what happened?
Big guy wears a mask.
The Batman?
Bigger. Threw the Batman through that wall.
Okay. If a dude were buff enough to toss bats through bricks.
There's no way the Batman could have walked away from it.
So where'd he go?
That's right. And as fate would have it, while Batman is in no condition to get himself out of that situation, Detectives Yin and Bennett arrive on the scene and are sort of surveying the scene, and they notice, of course, that not only is there all this wreckage, but that the Batmobile is still there. So as they are looking for Batman, we see that he is shot off his grappling hook and is hanging pretty precariously by his one good arm as he tries to hold on and keep out of sight long enough for Alfred to rescue him. He's almost discovered when a little droplet of sweat rolls off his face and nearly it drops right next to Detective Yin, but he's able to get out of sight just barely. And then we see Alfred lowering him down the other side of a bridge and getting him into the car in the alley. And he gets him on a getaway. And thankfully Bruce is also able to activate the Batwave TMCR and get the Batmobile to autopilot itself home. So there's no further evidence at the scene for the cops to recover. And as Alfred is driving him, he notes that he's got to get Bruce to a hospital. But Bruce is very persistent that he not take him to a hospital, that he can't do it. And Alfred sort of has a bit of a flashback to a different time that he was called to pick Bruce Wayne up. And then, of course, being the night his parents were died. We'll talk about that, I think, in visuals a little bit more. It's a very visual storytelling in that scene, but of young Bruce in the we just see a flash of young Bruce in the police station, and a young police officer with orange hair and a mustache, not sure who that might be, but comes and tells Bruce that someone is here to pick him up. And we see Alfred make a promise to Bruce there that he can't replace his parents, but that he'll always be there for him, which we'll come back a little bit later as well. And as we come back to present day, Alfred is still kind of arguing with Bruce about taking him to the hospital. He tells him that he doesn't have the medical expertise necessary to take Bruce and solve his injuries without a hospital. But of course, right as he's about to pull into the parking lot, he sees that there are already cops positioned there, as Yin and Bennett had thought to put a call out to all of the local hospitals to check in on any new patients that have broken bones. So Alfred, against his better judgment, decides not to take Bruce to the hospital and instead takes him home to try to take care of his wounds. And actually, I think that's when he has the flashback to Bruce in the police station. But it's clear that this is again, it's funny you mentioned there's a lot of what would end up being in the Chris Nolan films across all three of them, but one being that this version of Alfred especially really doesn't want him to be Batman.
The police can't handle Bane.
Neither, apparently, could the Batman. Ahem. Do try and rest, sir. I've spread word you'll be on holiday for some time, so no one should come bothering.
Alfred, Gotham needs the Batman.
Sir, I don't want to speak out of turn, but if Gotham thinks the Batman is no more, perhaps it is for the best. Perhaps Bruce Wayne can heal and finally get on with his life.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts him to see Bruce go out and kind of throw his life away in Alfred's eyes and not really live a life. And we'll get to that, but he... Bruce is able to hold on at least well enough to survive the night, and Alfred's able to set his bones, but it's going to be a long road to recovery. And we see that as we cut to 3 weeks later, and Bane is still has kind of just made the city his for the picking at this point.
Yeah, we get a news report stating that crime has run rampant. We get a shot of both of our lead detectives investigating a decimated storefront, mentioning that Bane was responsible for the destruction. And they're questioned by our nameless, faceless reporter, who I guess he's not faceless. He has a pretty recognizable face. But our nameless reporter who checks in and just wonders what happened to the Batman, and that's when Detective Yin lets them know that as of now the police are working as if Batman is no more. She uses very specific language there, so it's classic comic book language of the hero being no more. Won't say he's dead, won't say that he's, you know, he's deceased, but he's just no more. But and that's when we cut back to the Batcave, as we realize, of course, that Batman is still there. He's just kind of working quietly in the shadows. And as we talked about the parallels to the Nightfall storyline from the comics, Batman is in a wheelchair. I guess his back technically not broken, but he is in need of a wheelchair, as we see the work that Alfred did has gotten him up and around, but he's still weak, and he's working on this this bat mech suit still, the bat bot, and he's trying his best. Alfred protesting again, as you mentioned, the DNA of this Alfred. He's very much the father figure, and taking that role very seriously, does not want Bruce to go out and put himself in danger. Bruce, of course, ever the hero, declares that it's his responsibility, that Gotham needs him. And it looks like we're going to get a straight up homage to what actually happened in Night Quest, which was the follow up to the Nightfall storyline, which it was Alfred quitting and leaving Bruce after Bruce refused to kind of stop trying to be Batman, even as he was bound in a wheelchair. That story is a little bit very different and a little bit more complicated to try and go into. But essentially, Alfred did indeed quit based on the fact that Bruce refuse to stop trying to be Batman and heal. So we kind of get the tease of that as he threatens to walk away, but the very last second he notices that Bruce is continuing his work and struggling on this suit and decides that he's going to help Bruce. He's there to support him. That's what he's going to do, even if he's as stubborn as he is. And ultimately he's going to fulfill his role as a butler before he does as a caring father. But so he goes to help Bruce continue finishing the robot suit. And we cut to the Gotham City Bank, where we get a Bane break-in. We learned that Detective Yin is responding to a call as Bane continues his rampage of destruction, and she shows up there in an attempt to stop him. Meanwhile, they know this guy like is more powerful than any normal human being because of the destruction he's caused, right? Mm-hmm. She shows up with a pistol by herself. Mm-hmm. No body armor, no sort of backup, nothing. She's just got a pistol in hand, and she thinks that she's going to stop the Beast as he's tearing into and ripping a bank safe out of a wall. Not just like a little like tiny safe, like one of those gigantic bank safes, like a cartoonishly mm-hmm. large walk-in bank safe. He's
Scrooge McDuck's fortune behind that door.
Precisely. Something you'd see in the Fast and the Furious attached to like the back of a car. And she's going to stop him. But of course, he pays her almost no mind. And it appears that Detective Yin is about to meet her end when, thank goodness, here comes Iron Man.
Well, you mean, how else do you fight, as we found out in our April Fool's episode earlier this year, how else do you fight the Hulk but you get yourself some Hulk-busting armor?
That's right.
I mean, the Bat-Bot, of course.
Uh-huh.
Available at a toy store near you.
I was ready for the... I was just waiting for the Iron Man cartoon theme to come playing. I feel like it would have fit that scene very well, you know, when he breaks in and stops him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Maybe
do a little editing, and this will be our reel for the week.
Hell yeah. Love that idea. But yes, as we get a bit of fisticuffs there, and while Bruce is more of a physical match for him in the bot, he's still injured, soul, and the bot is still sort of a prototype. So he and Bane spill out of the bank and fly across almost through a building across the street. And as they continue their fight, the Bat-Bot begins to break down. He loses one of his arms, and Bane cuts it off with a blade of a helicopter. Mm-hmm. And it seems as though he's about to carve open the proverbial tin can here. He says he's going to expose. He left Batman with some dignity last time, but this time he's going to unmask the village door in this version.
You cannot beat Bane! Some dignity last time, but now I will unmask you, then break the rest of your bones.
As he does, Bruce notices a loose electrical cable that is there, and he's not quite able to reach it with his one good robot arm, but he fights through the pain and grabs a hold of it and jams it right into Bane's little venom port on his wrist, which causes a sort of an electrical chain reaction that fries Bane from the inside out. And lets him down easy. And Bruce, in a much more cheery mood this time, asks Alfred to come pick him up. And then we just get a little bit of an epilogue here where we see Bane being led away in handcuffs, and Detectives Yin and Bennett have another brief conversation, as is a theme of this first season, that Bennett is very clearly a guy who believes in the law, but also more importantly believes in right and wrong, and knows that the police are not enough to stop things like Bane, as just evidenced by what Bane was able to do while the Batman was out of commission for a little bit. So Yin reminds him that despite the fact that the Batman saved her life and did capture Bane, that this doesn't change anything and they'll still have to hunt him down. And Bennett kind of reluctantly agrees to that. And we then cut back to the Batcave for one last little humorous bit as we see the suit up sequence is apparently Batman's going out to fight crime back in his regular suit out of the cast. But as he throws on one of the gloves, he tweaks something a little bit. He's trying to move a little bit too fast. So just tells Alfred he's got to watch those sudden movements and then heads off into the night. He's back. So fun little ending there to wrap up the plot for this week.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess we can kind of briefly just touch on as we discussed as we were kind of going. I do like that they adapted some of the parts of Nightfall without it being a straight up rehash. I like the idea that he was quote broken in the way, in his own way. Like he wasn't, we didn't do the spot where his knee comes up and his back is broken over him. Instead he gets thrown through a brick wall, which is brutal in and of its own right, But, yeah, I like those elements that you can recognize the, hey, you know, these, if you know them, spots, but they weren't so heavily reliant on the source material for the Bane character. With that said, it's not a lot of, it doesn't feel like, because of the pacing of the episode, that the stakes are that high. Like you have the little bit of tease of, you know, is Alfred gonna walk away? Is Alfred gonna abandon him in his time of need? Simply because he's too stubborn to see that, you know, he's injured and maybe should consider resting. We don't really quite know or understand the time that takes place between the end of the Bane saga and how he's just back like walking around again. I guess there's enough time that's healed for him to just have minor aches and pains from moving. But yeah, the pacing of the episode is rapid, I dare say. It feels very, very fast. And you don't have a lot of time to quite, I think, take in the various different plot points that they say. So there's not a lot of breathing room for it. With that said, it's still early on in the series. I get it. When you introduce this character, as we talked about last week, especially in a series that was already under such heavy scrutiny because it's being compared to its predecessor, which was such an incredible legendary show. You have to do something different to stand out, so you can't just rehash more of the same. So I like the idea of bringing the character in to by multiple gang leaders, I guess, to try and get rid of the Batman problem. Mm-hmm. I think that you don't really get much depth in the Bane character. Certainly not as much as the original Batman animated series was able to get in the same kind of runtime. So a lot of that has to do with the action focus, I think. So, you know, it's just different styles. It's a different focus. It was more action than it was the actual storytelling. So for all those reasons, I think that the episode is fine. I think that the pacing kind of makes up for maybe a lack of story. So it helps in that way. Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't think that there's anything earth-shattering or really, really great here. So I just went with a 5 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went with the exact same score. I think it's solid. It's a fun little introduction. We don't really, across the series, Bane does have a few minor appearances in the rest of the series, but this is kind of his one and only starring attraction role in this series. So it's like I said, I think it's fine. We've talked about how much they wanted to differentiate the characters visually from anything that had come before that. And we'll certainly talk about that in visuals. But I think, unfortunately, like you said, because the focus is so much on action and the fight scenes, which are a lot of fun, there's really not much else for Bane to do. He's just even more so than last week. And as we talked about, yes, he was in kind of a mercenary and a hired gun. but he was, you know, he had this sense of honor and this whole, you know, we talked about the whole supervillain Lucha Libre thing going for him last week. And this version, he's just a big tough guy who knocks over banks. Like when he's done breaking Batman, he's just knocking over other banks. So right. doesn't seem to have aspirations of anything higher than just being a hired gun. So that's fine. Like I said, it's a different version. It doesn't have to be the same as the comics or other animated takes or what have you. But yeah, it's just it's not that exciting for a take on Bane. I think probably the strongest stuff is the Alfred Bruce subplot. But that is, you know, a pretty short amount. And I also feel like it's a nice moment when Bruce drops the wrench and Alfred is about to leave and then turns around and comes back and helps him. Like, it's very sweet and it's a nice moment. We'll talk more about that in voice acting probably, but it's not like they had some big knockdown, drag out argument, or I didn't feel totally earned.
Mm-hmm.
Of Alfred coming back to help at that in the 11th hour there. I feel like you almost need Alfred to leave in a scene,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, maybe two other scenes, maybe if you rearrange some things, maybe if you cut to the scene in the bedroom first and then he leaves and then you do the stuff with Yin and Bennett, and then you show the news reports of Bane wreaking havoc and then Alfred comes back, maybe it means a little bit more. But again, you only had a certain amount of time, and when this much of your whatever it is 21 minutes is devoted to action and toys, we gotta move pretty quickly. So I don't put that at the feet of the writer. Like I said, I think it's a pretty basic bare bones approach to a story in this case.
Yeah, I do not disagree with you. I think E for effort with adapting some of the more traditional Nightfall Night Quest mm-hmm. parts there and kind of trying to make them fit in and of their own way. So that's, I think I may have gone with a lower score had that not happened, but I appreciate those homages and the tributes to that character. It's hard, I think, as we've learned, with adapting the Bane character into whatever medium you decide to, you know, introduce him into, because you have such a legendary, and I think somewhat in the public mind of what that character did. Like, I think almost everybody knows the Bane, the Bane Breaks Batman, Jim Aparo image that we talked about last week. Like, I think it's pretty much in the public zeitgeist for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, the layman kind of understands and knows what the character is about. So when you change any of that, or it veers off in a different direction than what that story was, it's kind of a difficult hole to climb out of if you don't do something really great. So it's I think that's why both of our scores ended up being kind of middle of the road there. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And as you mentioned at the top, episode directed by a pretty legendary name, Sam Liu, who's responsible for a lot of great DC animation and worked on this show a bunch too. So let's talk a little bit about it. I slipped my mind as to who you mentioned the animation studio that was responsible for this week.
So we had Dong Yang, a familiar name to us. And then we have Sam Liu as the director, as mentioned. Another familiar name, ended up doing a lot of work for the direct-to-video DC features over the last decade or so. So, yeah, some familiar names in our directing and animation camps this week.
For sure, yeah. So I will give some highlights. I think that the Bat-Mech suit, while whatever iteration of Batman you watch when it comes to animated shows, I guess. The animated series didn't really have a mech suit, but you kind of got the fire suit in the new Batman Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the tie-in comics since then, you got the Dark Knight Returns Batman suit as a sort of mech suit homage. Mm-hmm. But there have been many, many bat robots.
Okay. Yeah, the, I would say this one's design specifically reminds me a bit of the Alex Ross Kingdom Come, like bat sentries that he has kind of patrolling the city once he's a little too old to go out there himself every night.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely some of that in there. I feel like there's probably some Dark Knight Returns influence in the artwork too, just kind of the big barrel chest and the kind of wide head also kind of fits that. But yeah, I'd say that's it's always it's interesting. It's designed to sell toys, you know, merchandise. We're gonna we're gonna sell this BatBot toy to the children's. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I feel like the fight sequence between him and Bane in the mech suit, it did just bring back homages to any time that you've seen Hulk and Iron Man fighting. I don't know what it is. I just could not unsee once I saw it. It felt very much like an Iron Man fight. It actually ends up, I forget which Avengers movie it is that he has the Hulkbuster armor in it, but it very much felt like that same fight because he ultimately gets the tar beat out of him, and I think, and doesn't Hulk maybe
it's it. Your first mistake is trying to remember the movie Avengers Age of Ultron, a movie that no one remembers. I mean, everyone remembers that they saw it. It made $1 billion, but nobody remembers what happened in it.
Thank you. At least my sins will be absolved for that one. Alone,
but yes, yeah. They do. There is a Hulkbuster versus Hulk fight in that movie.
It just gives you that same vibes. It's one big muscly guy versus a robot, and the muscly guy ultimately overpowers the robot to the point where he starts dismembering the robot, and the arms start coming off, and the legs start coming off, and he's gonna crush the robot. Because ultimately he's flesh and blood and the other thing is just a robot, so he can dismember it. And the directors take advantage of the fact that the robot can be dismembered, and it's kind of a plot device. But yeah, it looked kind of cool while it was on the screen. I like that. I will also mention a couple of homages that we had briefly talked about. So the Bruce scene where he's kind of laying with the oxygen mask on and laying in the hospital bed. There's a pretty famous sequence from Batman 498, and that art, of course, done by the great aforementioned Jim Aparo. He was responsible for that. But there's a sequence that pretty much mirrors. The only thing missing from it is Jean-Paul Valley and Robin, where I believe we're also in the scene in the comic with Alfred, as opposed to just being Alfred. And Bruce is conscious as opposed to unconscious. But again, one of those things they slipped in there that was a clear homage if you knew it. Same thing with Bruce being in the wheelchair, as we mentioned later on, and the argument between the two of them, another homage. There was another one that I picked up on, and I'm trying to figure out, I think based on our timeline here. So this came out in 2004. The Spider-Man Tobey Maguire live action film, that was 2001, I believe, or 2000? 2002. Okay, 2002. All right. So very famously, there's a scene in that movie where Spider-Man has just had a fight, his first fight with the Green Goblin, and he goes back to his house just in time for Thanksgiving dinner to meet up with Aunt May and the Osborns and Mary Jane. Peter shows up late. He had to grab some sort of. He had to fight an old lady to get, what was it, the cranberry sauce, I think, or something, as the story tells. But
something like that.
In the process, he's in his room after this fight happens. He gets his arm cut, and Aunt May and the Osborns walk into his room thinking that he's there because they hear something, and he's on the roof. His arm's cut because of this fight with the Green Goblin, and they're looking around for him. They cut to the, you know, the camera cuts to this giant slice in his arm, and you see the blood start to slowly drip. It drips down, just missing Norman Osborn's head, and then it hits the ground, which catches Norman Osborn's attention as he hears the blood drip, and then he kind of looks up, but as they cut to the ceiling, Peter has escaped. So I thought that was a very clear homage in this
100%.
Here, as we have, you know, Batman arriving or the police arriving to the scene after Batman has been incapacitated by Bane. He's waiting for Alfred to pick him up. In the meantime, he's hiding from the police. He's hanging above and he starts sweating viciously. They cut to the drip. It comes down and nearly misses our detective Lynn in the or Detective Yin, I'm sorry, in the scene, and it drips and she looks up and he just happens to be gone. So a very funny, cute homage to a Marvel property here. There's Marvel DNA in all of this, I guess. It's it just goes to show you there's some great tips of the cap here between the robot versus Hulk fight and then the Spider-Man homage.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you've been talking about how much the Bane represented or looked like the Hulk. And that's not an accident, to say the least. There's actually a post you can find on the lead character designer Jeff Matsuda's Facebook page from back in 2013, where he put up his sort of original character sketch of Bane, both the smaller version, who he doesn't mention it here, looks a lot like the G.I. Joe Snake Eyes when he's not all hulked out.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if that was intentional or not, but that's what a sort of homage is. There's no eyes or mouth on the mask, and he just kind of has this one little sort of, you can see one little sort of piece that goes over the eyes, that sort of combines the top and bottom half of the mask. But yes, when he grows large, Mr. Matsuda mentioned that he wanted Bane to have a much more Hulk-like appearance when he was on Venom, and he didn't want to just do a guy that got a little more vascular, like had been done in sort of previous versions. He wanted an obvious silhouette and color change when the Venom was coursing through his veins. And hey, mission accomplished. definitely obvious when he is and is not on Venom in this here episode. But yeah, like I said, I think it's a lot of fun. We mentioned it's very action based. I think they did that first fight is about as violent as you could get on like a TV Y7 show. Like you said, there's no back breaking, but there's, he gets all tossed around and smacked around. And then the final fight when he's sort of digging into the robot with the helicopter blade, and it's kind of piercing the suit, and then you see it kind of from Bruce's perspective begin to break through and get closer to his face. I think the fight seems to have some punch to him, certainly. Some of the visual storytelling in that the flashback bit where we see, we see young Bruce in the police station with we see like someone has put their hat on him, and you see the tears kind of flowing, and he's just holding the pearls in his hand and is just sort of flicking them around the string back and forth. And then Alfred comes up to him. I was really impressed by that. I think we talked about that previously when we did the Robin episode, but how they they were lacking in the more traditional plot or script storytelling, I felt like was made up in that moment. And you really feel that the emotion of that scene as Alfred arrives and sort of puts his hands on his shoulders and promises that he'll be by his side forever and all that. Like there's a very, very strong, I feel like, emotional storytelling told pretty much entirely through the visuals. And as we'll talk about in a minute, the voice acting, but visuals very strong in that flashback sequence.
Yeah. I love that. I love everything. It kind of worked together, especially not having much dialogue initially. And you just kind of see the pearls on the pearl necklace drop. And then it kind of zooms out and you see that it's Bruce holding it. And so you're taking those elements that have been done over and over and over and over again. Correct me if I'm wrong. Probably not, because the first episode of the Batman involved that weird Joker story. But I don't think they hadn't previously touched on Bruce's origins necessarily. So
there's a brief homage in that first episode where because Alfred presents him with a cake and tells him to make a wish. And he says, "I wish." And then he looks up at the picture of Thomas and Martha. But so they had alluded to it, but this is the first time seeing a young Bruce and seeing, kind of any elements of the actual night it happened. And again, I never know where to put sound design stuff, but there's also when that last pearl drops, we get like a close-up of his hands and the pearls are dropping on the string, and then that last one drops and they just put a gunshot.
Oh yeah.
Right as the last pearl drops, and they kind of slow that last pearl dropping very, very well. It's, as we talked about, slow motion and animation, not always easy to pull off either. So yeah, that's like you said, a lot of different things coming together there.
Speaking of sound design, while you're talking about it, I will also mention that one of the things that they did to really drive home the fact of the transformation between Bane was they change his voice. They give him a modulator on his voice. It gets deeper. I think the transformation is pretty interesting. The way that they did it, they kind of follow more of the Venom, and then you kind of notice him kind of hulking up. You don't quite get the same visual that you did in the Batman animated series, obviously, the sort of more exaggerated, more subtle, but and you kind of follow the pathway of this of the Venom as it kind of lights up and travels across his body. I will say also with the very end where he gets electrocuted, it's not quite as brutal as I thought it was going to be, but it's still pretty brutal where he jams whatever this electrical cord is into Bane's wrist, and then he starts to like pulsate at one point, kind of from the inside out, as you mentioned. And after he's electrocuted, and then it kind of things kind of backfire on him. Very not as brutal, I think, as it could have been. But I think they were really, 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 holding to that TVY7 rating here in the States that to keep this for kids. So they teetered on it, but didn't want to make it too, too brutal. But yeah, overall, I think it's heavy on the action, as we mentioned. The fight scenes are the things that really draw your attention. They're a little exaggerated. They're certainly more Eastern animation influenced, I would say, and a little
absolutely
less based in realism. Feels like Batman flies a little bit.
He's very fast too. Like he almost teleports in that first sequence. Mm-hmm. There's a shot where he like dodges out of the way of a punch, and then and he's kind of far away, and then all of a sudden he kind of just like pops up in front of the camera like a Looney Tunes character or something. But it's more done to illustrate kind of him moving, I guess, like a ninja or something like that.
Precisely. Yeah, you get a lot of that martial arts and Eastern animation influence here with the visuals. But overall, I ended up giving things a pretty strong 7 out of 10. I didn't think that there was anything that really, really blew me away. But I do think that the fight scenes are pretty strong, and I liked the subtle homages to the Nightfall bits again. So 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I went just 1 point higher. I went 8 out of 10. I think I just, like I said, I think the two fight scenes, and then, like I said, I appreciate the visual storytelling and even the more emotional beats, I think is really, really strong there as well. So, yeah, very, very solid outing from our visuals department.
There we go. All right, Liam, let's move on to our music for this week's episode.
That would be one Thomas Chase, credited as the musician on here. And of course, it's been a while since we've been in a season one episode, so let's give a shout out to legendary U2 guitarist The Edge, with our theme song.
The best Batman theme song out of all Batman's. Really sets the tone for the entire show. The theme song itself, obviously, pretty memorable for the guitar riff and the very Edge-like composition, but then it sort of sets the tone for the transitions that go throughout the episode. I will say that as we've talked about before, the music is less of a character as it is in Batman the Animated Series or the other DCAU shows. It certainly is more of a filler. They use it a lot for transitioning from scene to scene. I did notice a little bit at the beginning, you get some hi-hat right off the bat, some drums that come in that you're kind of setting the tone for these mob bosses that are meeting some, not quite like a Read My Lips jazz sequence, but it's enough to kind of give you a mobster vibe, I guess, if you're hearkening back to the heyday of the mob. But I think the rest of the episode, you get music that's played for dramatic effect, usually some guitar riffs that are kind of played off in the background, or occasionally I heard some keys, some piano that comes in that kind of, drums up some of the drama. And I think some synthesizer that comes in, especially during the flashback sequence of the police department. But yeah, I think that the majority of the music is not the focal point as the action and a lot of the dialogue seems to be, but it does its job. I think it's sufficient enough, and I didn't find anything offensive or distracting. So I ended up going with a 6 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I had the exact same score of 6 out of 10. I think it's a solid outing. We've talked about this a lot. It's a lot of like we punctuate those kind of more dramatic moments where the end of a scene with just like the little guitar, the echoey guitar riff, which I kind of like that as an intro and outro to a scene as well, and then also just on top of what you mentioned, that right at the end there, after we have our little humorous outro with Batman hurting his shoulder as he runs and jumps into the Batmobile, we get kind of a fun little play on what felt like maybe almost a play on the 60s theme a little bit as he rides out to fight for justice once again. So yeah, solid job at a 6 out of 10 for both of us.
There you go. All right, let's take it on home, Liam, with our final category of the day, which is going to be our voice cast. Speaking about our voice cast, a lot of the people that we've talked about in prior episodes that we reviewed in this Elseworld, but I think it's worth a revisit. As we have mentioned, we don't visit it very often, so worth talking about each of our players this week. So let's go ahead and talk about our voice cast.
That is right, Cal. We have a few notable voices to mention in our supporting cast before we get to our main player. Playing the mob bosses, we have Michael Bell, who I'll only mention does a lot of Transformers voices. So probably a name you'd recognize, and also maybe more importantly, the voice of Duke in the 80s G.I. Joe cartoons.
Ah, there you go. All right, there's your Snake Eyes tie-in right there. You had Snake,
absolutely.
You had Bane looking like Snake Eyes, and you had the voice of Duke present. There you go.
Absolutely, and then we have playing Bane. We have Joaquin De Almeida, apologies if I'm butchering that, but it's been things like the Fast. There's your Fast and the Furious tie-in. He's been,
what do you know?
He's been, I think he's the main villain of 5, who is then like the dad of Jason Momoa's character in the new one. I've never seen any of them. But yes, he plays Reyes. So if you're someone who not only watches those movies but learns the character's name, let me know who Reyes is. But either way, that's probably what he's most famous to. I like him when he's just normal Bane, and then as you mentioned, they kind of put this voice effect on him to really differentiate the Bane voice. He doesn't have a lot to do. He's just kind of a generic and menacing bad boy, but he does a solid job with it.
Yeah, he's fine. I think that the modulator really drives home the monster type feeling of his transformation. But I think in the brief bits that we get where he does have to deliver dialogue, I didn't find anything terrible. In fact, it was pretty believable. He growls a little bit through his delivery and seems to be not too happy with having to go up against Batman. I think he seems like he turned in a solid effort.
Absolutely. And then elsewhere in our cast, we have, of course, Steve Harris playing Detective Ethan Bennett, Bruce Wayne's best friend, and of course, the Batman's would-be enemy, maybe most famously for being one of the big series regulars on the show The Practice, which was the precursor to Boston Legal, which is a much better show, but The Practice was all right too. And then playing his partner in policing is, of course, the great Ming-Na Wen, who folks would know probably most famously as the voice of Mulan. Although more recently, she's had a turn in the Star Wars universe as Boba Fett's friend. What's her name?
Fennec Shand.
Okay. Yes, Boba Fett's friend. She has robot stomach or something.
Yeah.
I swear I've seen that show. Mm-hmm. But
that's right.
But yes, we have them both again very kind of briefly in the episode. But I would say our two main stars to talk about, perhaps unsurprisingly for a Batman show, we have Alistair Duncan as Alfred, and of course we have Reno Romano, Spider-Man PS1 himself, Reno Romano as the Batman. They're the main characters of the episode, and they have the most to do. I think I really, really enjoy Alistair Duncan. We've talked about it ad nauseum of how much we adore Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. turn, Jr.'s turn as Alfred in the main animated series. But with his passing, I really don't think there's been anybody else that's ever come as close to being just such a great, near perfect Alfred as Alistair Duncan has. He's played him not just in this show, but in many of the other direct animated features and some video games as well, I think. So just love Alistair Duncan as Alfred. And as mentioned, their kind of the whole emotional plot of the episode is built around their sort of father-son relationship and Alfred's clear love for Bruce, but also for, you know, not wanting to see him throw his life away and kind of trying to give him some tough love and before ultimately kind of acquiescing and agreeing to help Bruce, and, you know, understanding that whether he's there or not, Bruce is going to do this. So the best thing he can do to protect him is to be a part of this life and to try to help him from afar here.
Yeah, he's really good. I think I was really impressed with the fact that as we look at it, it's, you know, the second episode of the series, essentially, as far as production order is concerned. And while Reno Romano has a decent share of the dialogue here, a lot of the emotional beats and the seemingly the lion's share of the responsibility for the episode kind of goes to Mr. Duncan, in the way that he both interacts with Bruce. And then we have the sequence where he's kind of just wistfully speaking himself, you know, recounting the night that he picked up Bruce from the police station. So yeah, I think he does such an incredible job. You know, they're still developing, I think, their own chemistry here. You can still tell that there's still some chemistry that's developing here, but it's pretty evident that they have sufficient chemistry. And it's one of those things where as the show goes on, it seems to just increase. So yeah, really, really impressed with Alistair's pretty strong responsibility here that he's kind of able to stand up with and really take hold of and didn't really miss anything. I think he did a really strong job, and I think what was asked of him was a lot, and he didn't drop the ball.
Absolutely, yeah. So for all those reasons, mostly on the strength of our two leads there, I gave voice acting a pretty strong 8 out of 10.
Yep, I gave it the exact same score, 8 out of 10. For that very reason, it's solid all the way around. Those two have the majority of the dialogue. I mean, outside of our detectives and them bouncing off each other, and they have sufficient chemistry that it feels like they're truly coworkers. So, you know, not a lot asked of them. So looking at Mr. Duncan's, you know, performance, that really, I think, is what gave me the higher numbers on the score, because it's really impressive that so early on here, he's really grasping what this Alfred character's DNA truly is. And as you mentioned, it's a slightly different take than what we've seen in Batman, the animated series. Obviously it's different, but he still has that fatherly role, but I think it's just comes from a different place in his delivery and the emotion that he's kind of able to convey. It's not something I think that maybe Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. was given as much an opportunity to do, especially so early on in the show. So I think that's doubly impressive. So reflects in both of our scores for that reason, I'd say.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, like you said, still very early on in the series, better performances perhaps by both men later on. But like I said, I think you could just feel that that very paternal, you know, concern and love in especially Mr. Duncan's voice in this episode, and both in the flashback and in the present day, and how he's sort of aghast by Bruce wanting to get back out there. So yeah, very solid job by our two leads.
All right, Liam, let us total everything up now that we've reached the end of our scores. And totaling everything up, I end up with a 26 out of 40. What about you?
And I am just 1 point higher at a 27 out of 40. So not much different there. We, like I said, we don't watch every single episode of this show. So obviously this is a rewatchability, not really in the traditional way that we normally grade that. But as far as, would this be an episode that if you haven't watched the show or haven't seen much of this show. Would this be one I would say for somebody to check out? Probably not.
Yeah.
It's a fun, solid little episode. Like you said, there are some fun little homages. They do have sort of a mini Nightfall arc with him getting broken and having to sort of build himself back up and everything, as you said, and the stuff with Alfred as well. So there are some fun homages if you're a big Bane fan, I suppose. But this is, like I said, it's a fine little 21 minutes. I'm certainly not upset that we watched it, but I don't feel like this really necessarily represents the best of what this series did well either.
I don't think there's any reason to watch it unless you're on the Bane train. Like
that's right. Know. If you got Bane on the brain, that then you can pop this in between The Dark Knight Rises and Batman the Animated Series. What else is Bane in? Probably in a Lego thing.
Yeah, probably.
Playing the first Arkham game, whatever, you know, other stuff that Bane's in. If you got Bane on the brain, you can definitely throw this on just to see a wildly different visual take. That's probably the strongest endorsement I would give it. It was just because it's such a swing. We talked about that with the Joker design when we covered that episode. The series and the series and Jeff Matsuda as the lead character designer just took some real big swings and did not play it safe, which I do really respect. So
absolutely.
might be worth just testing out and seeing just a completely different, more abstract, more, as you said, more Eastern animation influenced style on the Batman here. So yeah, there's some meat on the bone, but not a must watch by any means.
You know, if your favorite podcast is doing a review of the episode, I'd say that's a good reason to watch. Right?
There you go.
All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to wrap things up for this week. Thank you, everybody, for checking out this Elseworlds edition of the podcast. Don't forget, we would love your support for the pod, and there's several different ways that you can do so. As we mentioned at the top, you can subscribe to us on the Pod Tower. You can subscribe to us on your favorite podcast application, like Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hit the subscribe button. If that podcast application allows you to leave a review, whether it be just a star rating, or maybe it also allows you to leave a little blurb about what it is that you enjoy about the podcast, we would greatly appreciate either one or both of those. So if you do, and hey, if you leave us a review and why don't you, and you follow us on social media, tweet it at us or send it into our DMs and let us know that you left it. You know, who knows, you know, we might have a little gift for you if you do. So tweet or slide into our DMs to let us know if you leave a review. We would be greatly appreciative of that. Other ways to support the podcast, you can check out the show notes, and there's a couple of links there. One is to our merchandise store if you want to buy a piece of merchandise that supports the pod. A couple of witty, fun things there for you to get: hats, shirts, mugs. It's all there. Stickers, even. Pick one of those up if you want to support the podcast. That helps us out. Or if you just want to buy myself and or Liam a coffee, you can use the little link that's down there. Also, we have some monthly supporters. They're people that support us monthly. You can do a one-time donation, whichever way you choose to support us. We greatly appreciate it. And we appreciate those that do take their hard-earned dollars and they give them a portion of them to us each and every month. Thank you to each and every one of our supporters. Don't forget also, some good ways to support us is through social media at DCAU Review on Instagram and Twitter and Threads. That's still a thing. I don't think we're using it very much, but hey, if X/Twitter goes the way one day, hey, people have been predicting it for a long time. This is it. This is the end. Everyone's leaving now. They changed the logo. We're all leaving. All right. We're out of here. Yeah. We'll see if that holds true, but you know, follow us on Threads. It's easy to do so. It's linked to our Instagram. So if and when we ever choose to use that site more regularly, you'll be able to get those updates directly there. Liam, it is the end of the month of July. Believe it or not, what a fun 5 weeks it has been thus far. Quite memorable, some great episodes of Batman the Animated Series and this episode of The Batman that we've covered. But we're turning the page for next month, and we are headed back to some very sunny skies. That's right, We're going to be covering more Static Shock for the month of August, at least for the majority of it. We're going to have a very cool special guest correspondent in the middle of the month that we will be talking with that is connected directly with Static. Had an incredible conversation with someone that's deeply involved with that, and I can't wait to bring that to you. But before then, we have next week's episode, so let's drop a little preview, shall we?
That's right. We've got a... It's sort of a... It ended up being a theme. We've got a pretty special deal coming at least in the middle of the month that we'll tell you about probably at the end of next week's episode. But we're kicking it off with a season two episode, one of our last season two episodes, in fact. That being the episode Attack of the Living Brain Puppets. We've got a very popular girl running for class president who also happens to have the ability to turn people into mind-controlled zombies. What else? High school, am I right?
Oh, man. No.
But no, we'll be talking about that episode, Attack of the Living Brain Puppets, next week. Can't wait to get back and see what other wacky hijinks those Dakota kids are up to. So looking forward to that starting next week.
Gonna be a lot of fun. Can't wait. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.